Welcome back to another episode of The Lars Resort. Still with me, Lars Sivertsen. Yet again with me, Lars Sivertsen. And, as always, brought to you by Betson. I'm not on the road this time. You may notice I'm not outside. I'm not at a pub. I am not at the Guardian Towers recording a podcast there. You see, this is what I was telling Kate at the last episode. I shouldn't have said anything. So, but you know, she's, you know, Kate's a very optimistic person. She says, you know, aim for the stars and you might hit the moon or whatever. But what also might happen is that your rocket might not launch at all, or it might explode like one of Elon Musk's curiously phallic rockets. I spent the evening watching the game and recording an episode of the Guardian Football Weekly. And I brought my recorder because I kind of hope maybe I can kill two birds with one stone here. Maybe I can kind of get like a pre-match vibe check from Max Rushton. Can I ask Barry Glendening at halftime what he makes of the game so far? You know, I have done this stuff before. Back with the OG Norwegian podcast, I once did an interview with Jonathan Wilson that was conducted in the green room before a live show. Just kind of literally cornered him and say, Wilson, talk to me about some stuff. Like, I have pulled this move before, but you just got to keep your sort of social antennae out and sort of, is it appropriate to try to work on your other projects here right now, or do you need to go to work? And this night, it was not appropriate at all, I could tell. The mood was not, you know, it was not appropriate for me to try to do an episode of The Lars Resort whilst being on a completely different job for The Guardian. So I didn't do that. So we're back at base now. But at least it means I was watching this game a little bit more closely than I was watching Spain-France. I must admit, I was not in pub mode. I was in full taking notes and taking this stuff very seriously mode, which means I have many things to say about England getting to the final of Euro 2024, which is a thing that has happened. England, this team that has just been a pox on everyone, really. In some ways, early in the tournament, they were the least watchable team in the tournament, I think, at one point. It felt like they were. They were not impressive. They were not good. They were not playing well. They have somehow scraped their way into the final of Euro 2024. How did this happen? I mean, observers are puzzled. I'm seeing the great and the good of the football writing fraternity really struggle to make sense of it all. But let's not try for the galaxy brain theory straight away. Let's just go very basic on this. Let's just look at what happened during the game and what we make of it, right? Before the game, when the lineups came out, I mean, I heard some sighs in the room, I'm not going to lie. I think people were hoping Gareth Southgate would play some other people or do some different things, but Gareth keeps picking the same team, the team that I suppose he assumes is the best team. He puts faith in his guys, and that has been a theme throughout the tournament. Gareth has faith in his guys, and he continues with it. Now, pretty early on in the game, 7 minutes, in fact, we get 1-0 by Xavi Simons. An incredible hit, just beautiful, beautiful goal. I mean, I know it's a meme that Jordan Pickford has, like, not the longest arms in the world in relation to the rest of his body, that he has, like, tiny dinosaur arms, but really, couldn't fault the guy for not getting to this. An unbelievable hit by Xavi Simons, who is just, he's a great talent. He's had a great season for RB Leipzig in the Bundesliga. He's going to have a huge career, but he hasn't actually, like, fully done it for the Dutch national team. He's never really established himself, never really been able to do his stuff, but certainly he did his stuff there. What a goal that was. And that early goal for the Dutch put the onus firmly on England to go out and do stuff. And you know what? A crazy thing happened in this first half. England played really well. England were moving the ball. They were passing the ball like Declan Rice and Kobbie Mainoo and Phil Foden and Bellingham and Dale. The ball was moving well. You saw some back heels. You saw some nice passing moves. The English were enjoying themselves tremendously, which for seasoned observers of the England team is perhaps a huge confusing turn of events, because they haven't been enjoying themselves, and watching them has certainly not been very enjoyable. But of course, a game of football involves more than one team, and you have to kind of look at both teams to understand why the thing that's happening on the pitch is happening. And it just occurred to me in this first half that this was really the first time, possibly in the entire tournament, where England were playing against a team that was not sitting back, that was not like defending in like a low block or a mid to low block, that were not like trying to compress the space and just kind of make it difficult. The Dutch had come to play. And this is something I've kind of complained about with regards to the Dutch the whole tournament. that midfield, which is basically their entire second choice midfield. I was speaking to a friend of the show, Michelle Youngsby, who I'm trying to get on. I'm hoping we'll get him on the show soon, who said that basically, if they'd all been fit, Mats Wiefer, who just signed for Brighton, and Tuin Koopmeiners and Frenkie de Jong would likely have been the Dutch midfield three, but none of them are available. So it's Gianni Rangers, Jadon Schouten, and Xavi Simons, which is a midfield that there's a lot of skill there. There's a lot of technique, as we saw against Romania, against an opponent that just kind of sat back and let the Dutch have the ball. They moved the ball very well and looked kind of sexy, but I was always worried, and you've heard me harp on about this all tournament, like what happens when this team comes up against a strong opponent? I never liked them off the ball. I don't think there's enough. Like they're the opposite of France. France have got all water carriers and that sort of Rabiot, Kante, and Tchouameni type of thing. They're all guys who run around and kick people. These guys have got no one who runs around and kick people. Like Schouten is like a ball distributor, like a technical guy. Reinders is an attacking technical player. Xavi Simons is basically a forward. Like these are all very technical attacking players. And when they came up against England, England found it much easier to play than they have previously in the tournament. And it sounds daft to say out loud that it was easier for England to play against the Dutch than it had been against like Slovakia and Slovenia. But really, it was, because those teams sat back and compressed the space and didn't let England have any room to play in. That is not what the Dutch did. England found loads of space and they were really enjoying themselves in this first half, or at least for round about the first half hour of the first half. They got the equalizer through a slightly contentious penalty. This seems to be the thing everyone's talking about, but I am going to continue my sort of general policy of not spending too much time on refereeing decisions, because I think it's a little bit boring. Anyway, so Harry Kane, in spite of, I think we all agree, not playing a very good tournament and not looking fit and being like a significantly reduced version of himself, now has a pretty good shot at the Golden Boot. If he gets one more, I think that'll get him there. He's joint top scorer in the tournament alongside Cody Gakpo, Dani Olmo, George Mikautadze, Ivan Schrantz, and Jamal Musiala. So really, unless Dani Olmo scores in the final, Harry Kane just needs one more. So it could be Golden Boot Harry Kane, in spite of him being a bit rubbish in this tournament. I guess it feels almost like symbolic or symptomatic or whatever of England that they have been so bad for so much of this tournament, certainly in terms of entertainment value. And certainly in terms of like fluidity of movement and attack and all of this. But somehow they are in the final. What could be more appropriate than Harry Kane, who's like miles off it and not moving well and just not looking good at all, somehow snagging the Golden Boot? But anyway, England got back into it through that penalty. And whether you agree with the decision or not, it was not undeserved that England got a goal. You know, Phil Foden had a ball cleared off the line after some very clever footwork there. I mean, I think the first half here was Phil Foden's best performance in this tournament by just an absolute mile. And England were moving the ball around in a way we haven't seen them been able to do previously in the tournament, or at least for the first half hour. Because around about the 30-minute mark, something happened, which was that Memphis had to go off with an injury. And Ronald Koeman, you know, he's not everyone's favorite coach, he's not everyone's favorite tactician, but he's not a moron, right? This is clear. And he must have been looking at this game and seeing England cut through that midfield so easily and so casually and thought, this is kind of bad. This is not how I was hoping this game would go. And when Memphis had to go off with an injury, it presented him with an opportunity. Instead of replacing Memphis with another forward, his solution was to put on Joey Veerman, who is a midfielder. It's one of those things. The Dutch may not have the sort of hard-hitting defensive midfielder they would have wished that they would have had. They may have had to put together this sort of backup, slightly too technical and vibes-based midfield. But if you don't have a punchy defensive midfielder to sort everything else for you, I guess one solution can be to just throw on more midfielders, throw in all the midfielders. So putting on Veerman meant they basically had one extra midfielder in there, and moving Simons into a slightly different position, of course, but there was an extra guy in there to play in midfield. They also sat back, I thought, noticeably more towards the end of that half. After the substitution was made around about the 35th minute, they started being a little bit more compact, the Dutch, sitting back a little bit more, making it a little bit harder for England to play. And towards the end of the half, England were not I didn't think, moving the ball as brilliantly as they had done for the first half hour. And this kind of continued on into the second half. We had Big Vout come on at halftime. You know, cometh the hour, cometh the Vout. He'd been sat there on the bench doing his own research throughout the first half, and he was ready to go. We also saw Luke Shaw come on, which was just incredible. Like, England having a left-footed player on the left flank. Absolutely incredible scenes. But as the second half kicked off and the second half kind of kept happening, it was clear that after the Dutch kind of added another midfielder and sat back a bit more, England were not able to create as much as they were. Not that they actually created that many chances, but they certainly weren't moving the ball as fluidly as they were at times in the first half. I did think overall England were looking more confident on the ball. I guess just having that feeling that things were going better probably lifted them a little bit. I think it's worth saying again how impressive it is that Kobbie Mainoo has kind of taken to this level. I'm not sure he's an ideal solution for that midfield spot, but he is adding a lot more than Conor Gallagher did and Trent Alexander-Arnold did when they tried to play there. Thought Jude Bellingham looked better in the first sort of hour of the game. At least Foden, again, played his best game for England in the tournament. But I kind of wrote down in my notes after 60 minutes, in all caps, just so I wouldn't forget it, because I was kind of like, ooh, England are a bit better. But I wrote here in all caps, England not actually creating a lot of chances, because they weren't. And weirdly, as the second half went on, around the sort of 65th minute, thereabouts, the combined XG for both teams so far in the second half was zero. Like, it was almost 20 minutes of football in the second half of this game before anyone had any kind of effort on or towards target. Like, the first chance of any note came when the Dutch had a set piece that Pickford saved pretty well. But the point is, 20 minutes of football happened in the second half of this game, and the teams had a combined XG of zero. Like, there's just nothing happening after the Dutch kind of retreated, packed the midfield. They managed to stop England, but they themselves were not creating anything. I thought it was kind of weird that England didn't try to attack more down the flanks, because the Dutch packing the midfield, they weren't really tracking the wingbacks very well. Like, this was a thing even before Luke Shaw came on. We kept seeing Trippier in a lot of space on the left-hand side. And we kept seeing Saka just have a lot of space and room, but not really getting the ball a lot. I kind of thought England could have attacked the flanks a little bit more. But the second half was not great from England's perspective. Again, in my notes here from the 70th minute, I wrote, England fading badly. Mainoo looking a bit off it now. Subs? Question mark? I was thinking right about the 70th minute. And in the 75th minute, I write, England really should make a sub now. Like, I'm clearly getting a bit impatient and grumpy. I write, Palmer should come on. But then I wrote in my notes, and I think this is a pertinent question, like, which player out of Foden, Saka, and Bellingham do you take off for Palmer? Because Phil Foden has had his best game of the tournament, clearly, so far. Bukayo Saka was the guy who rescued you in the last game, and Bellingham is kind of your big star who rescued you in the game before that. So it's pretty clear that Palmer should come on and do something in this game, but it's kind of hard to know who you hook and what you do. And in the 77th minute, Xavi Simons had a chance. The ball was loose in the box. He hit a kind of a volley, type of volley on the bounce, but he didn't catch it properly. But at this point, it really felt like England they've gone into full tournament England mode again. This is kind of bad. And it occurred to me that this game has followed the exact same trajectory as the Switzerland game, in a sense. Because in the first half of that game, England were just sort of pouring down Bukayo Saka's side, England's right-hand side, because the Swiss, again, Aebischer, who's a sort of repurposed central midfielder, wasn't doing a great job defensively as a wing-back there. They identified England that Saka was getting a lot of space, was getting a lot of joy. They kept playing it out to Saka. Saka kept creating difficulties. And when the Swiss kind of figured out, oh, this is bad, and they adjusted it, they told Vargas to come deep. We talked about all this sort of stuff. The Swiss made a tactical adjustment so that hole was plugged, and then England stopped creating chances and just kind of didn't do anything in the second half of that game. The exact same thing happened here. The Dutch were way too open in the middle, and Mainoo and Foden and Bellingham and all the lads kept like finding space to play in and kept moving the ball really well. And that's not taking anything away from them, by the way. I mean, they played well, but they were finally up against an opponent that kind of gave them the space to do so. And Koeman looked at this and thought, oh no, like, this must stop. Put on another midfielder. The team sat back a bit more, blocked off that space. They made a tactical adjustment, which meant that the opening that England were exploiting was no longer there. And England stopped creating chances. Like, the same thing as we saw against Switzerland. The one exception to that is the 2-1 goal that was ruled off for offside, because that was a really nice attack. It was just a shame it was offside, but it was actually a very sweet move. And in the 80th minute, Palmer comes on for Foden, which I thought at the time was like, yep, I agree with that. Foden was good in the first half, but faded in the second. Saka, after his sort of heroics, his wonderful goal the last round, you probably keep some faith with him, and Bellingham is Bellingham, so you probably keep him on. So hooking Foden for Palmer, that seemed like the logical thing to do. And Kane came off, and it's not really a shock because, again, physically, Kane is not right. And that is what I would say as for this sort of Kane is England's Ronaldo narrative that some people have been putting out there, which I don't agree with because like Kane has actually scored goals, which Ronaldo did not manage. But the crucial difference is even though he is the captain and the star striker and all of that, Southgate is prepared to bench him and Kane is prepared to accept being benched without kicking off. But the thing that surprised me here was that it was Watkins that came off. I thought for sure they would go with Ivan Toney because it looked to me like the space that was available was out on the flanks with the Dutch kind of packing the midfield. You can go around the flanks, put a lot of crosses in. Ivan Toney could be there in the box. But they went with Ollie Watkins, who has had very limited minutes previously in the tournament. I write here in my notes, England creating very little, but the Dutch also not, which is kind of a grammatically not amazing sentence. But yeah, as much as this half was a bit of a snoozer and England kind of weren't able to move the ball as well as they had been in the first half and weren't looking quite as good, the Dutch also weren't creating a ton. And Cole Palmer, as expected, made an impact. He had a chance that he missed, which was set up in a sense by Luke Shaw, who had a nice touch and a cross. And wow, wasn't it nice to see an actually left-footed player on England's left flank? Just unbelievable stuff. But it did look for all the world like we were heading into extra time. There had been very few chances in the second half overall. England had kind of become the bad England again. The Dutch weren't up to much. It was a really bad second half when almost out of nothing, Cole Palmer, who was positive when he came on, who I like a lot for this England team because he looks unaffected by the pressure, by the anxiety, all of this sort of stuff. He's always looking to make stuff happen on the ball. Cole Palmer spots Ollie Watkins on the run, plays a ball in. Difficult angle for Watkins, but he just hits, just, it's such a good finish. It's not like curled into the top corner like Lamine Yamal, but like technically that is such a difficult thing to do from a slightly tight angle to just hit it absolutely sweet and with that kind of force and right into the bottom corner. Unbelievable finish by Ollie Watkins. And you know what? This goal kind of reminded me of the kind of goal we've seen. I feel like we've seen Harry Kane score that goal a lot of times earlier in his career when he was a little bit sharper physically, making that sort of run in behind and hitting the ball pretty early into the bottom corner. Huge Harry Kane energy over that goal, except Harry Kane currently is not able to do that. Harry Kane would not have made that run because he's just physically not in a great place. Ollie Watkins, however, was. And I was certainly wrong about that sub. I didn't think it made any sense. But turns out Gareth Southgate knows a thing or two about how to manage football teams and make substitutions. You know, pundits in the UK have such an incredibly condescending tone about Southgate. Like, you really get the sense they don't respect him at all. But many times in this tournament, he's made decisions that were unpopular or strange and not what people were expecting that have turned out to be correct or at least to be vindicated in some kind of way. And England are off to the final. Incredibly, implausibly. It's hard. I mean, I guess the obvious thing you would say is that they have been in the friendly half of the draw, right? Spain have had to beat Germany. They've had to beat France to get there. England have had to beat Slovakia, Switzerland, and the Dutch. It's not quite the same caliber of opponent. That is certainly true. But they have also grown into the tournament. It is a thing. They were deeply underwhelming in the group stage. They were real bad against Slovakia, but they managed to get it done. They were a little bit better against the Swiss. They were quite a bit better in the first half here. And I guess the thing we would say going into the final against Spain, at least that is a team you would think England will finally get to counterattack a little bit. England are finally coming up against an opponent where they're probably going to have less possession than the team they're up against and will probably have opportunity to run into space a little bit. It's very hard for me to make a case for England in that game. I mean, we talked about this yesterday. Spain have been the best team in this tournament, and it's not even close. It would be a gross injustice, I think, if they don't win this final. But I don't know, man. Irrational things seem to be happening with this England team. And an English national team, which for so many years have kind of found ways of failing at international level, often with very promising squads and a lot of big names that you could never just kind of get it together. This summer, they've done like the most un-English thing, which is like just kind of getting it done. You know, late equalizers, late winners, winning penalty shootouts. Like, this is not very English. Sometimes I think about the way this tournament has gone for the English national team and say, if we just kind of pretend they were all Italian, like if this had been Italy, just think about that for a second. If this had been Italy, who went through the group stage the way they did, who kind of just about edged their way past Slovakia, who needed penalties to take out Switzerland, and who then kind of punished a not very impressive Dutch team. It's very like an Italian vibe to this whole project. It feels very un-English in a sense. And maybe, I don't know, maybe there's something weird going on. Maybe there's something that doesn't quite make sense. I can't get away from the fact that in footballing terms, any rational analysis of the final that's going to happen on Sunday would have to like conclude with Spain being quite a lot better at football. That is what we've seen in this tournament. But we have also seen an England team that, in spite of not being that good, are finding ways of getting it done. Is that just because they've faced poor opponents? It's possible. Spain is certainly the best team England will have faced because they've been the best team in the tournament by a million miles. But England are there, implausibly and incredibly. And as much as I didn't think this was going to happen, I find myself very happy for them. For all the reasons I talked about in the episode before last and all the reasons Kate talked about in last episode, I really want Gareth Southgate's England to succeed. It would make me very, very happy, as much as it would be something of a footballing injustice if Spain didn't win this tournament. It certainly sets us up nicely for a final between the best team in the tournament and this English team, which you just kind of have to respect the fact that they've gotten it done without being very good, with having all these things wrong with it and constantly being criticized. Like, there's been so much negativity around this team in the country. There's so many people in this country right now who've kind of made up their minds about Southgate and this team and just think they're terrible. Yet here they are in the final again. It's the second consecutive Euros that they've been in the final of. And I really think, I mean, come what may on Sunday, I do think this is Gareth Southgate's last game as England manager. All the indications are that this is his time. He's finished with it now. And I do hope that when the dust settles on this, England as a footballing nation will be able to acknowledge that he's done an incredible job. And again, I've said it before, they got to the semi-finals of the World Cup in 2018. They got to the final of Euro 2020. They got to the quarterfinals of the World Cup in Qatar, where again they lost to France, who was the second best team in that tournament. And they're in the final of this. It hasn't been pretty. It hasn't been convincing. But they've gotten there, and I think so much of that is on Southgate creating an atmosphere, creating a culture. The thing that I thought Kate worded very brilliantly in the last episode, he's managed to unify an English squad, which has not often been united. There's always been like strife and disagreements and nonsense in the England team, and there is none of that now. For all their flaws, there is none of that now. They all seem to be pulling in the same direction and getting on and all of that, and that matters quite a lot, and it's not an easy thing for the coach to do. Again, I am fully expecting them to get spanked against Spain, but it is impressive that in spite of everything, they have managed to get there. And I am massively looking forward to seeing this final on Sunday. What are we going to do with the last game of our boosted goalscorer feature in this tournament? I haven't really thought about this before now, but I feel like we should nail it. We should nail our colors to the mast now. We should make a call now, and I can send that into BetsOnline and we can get it boosted. You know what? It's a really boring shout, but there's something about the way this tournament has gone. I think we might get Harry Kane Golden Boot. I know it sounds ridiculous. I know he's been so bad, but here he is, joint top scorer along with about seven other players. Maybe England will get a penalty. Maybe something will fall at his feet from a set piece. You know, maybe he'll actually do something good. I mean, in fairness to Kane, I did think he was looking a little bit better in the first half of this game. He's still a little bit far away from the player he normally is. But he was running a bit and he was doing some things. I can't imagine Southgate dropping him for the final of the Euros, even if Watkins was sharp when he came on and scored a goal. I think Harry Kane will start. He might come off, as we've seen Southgate willing to substitute him off. And I don't think Harry Kane is a big diva. I think he understands that. But I think he'll start. And whether it's through a penalty or something, I think he will find a way in the same sort of implausible way as this England team seems to find a way during this tournament, even though they're not very good. Harry Kane, very much the symbol of this England team. Not at his best, not moving freely, it's not looking good, but he has found a way to score three goals. And no other player in the tournament has scored more than that. So let's pick the least interesting thing. I guess it probably is. But listen, it feels right. I think Harry Kane might score again in the final. That's going to be my pick for the last of the boosted goalscorer picks. And we will see how that final goes. Should be fun. Could be that Spain absolutely smash England out of sight. But this has been a curiously resilient England team. Even if they're not good, I maintain still, they're not very good. But they're curiously resilient. And who knows? Maybe that will take them across the line. We will find out on Sunday, and I hope you will join me for the last episode when it happens after that game.